This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on child maintenance in finances in divorce. This is part two of our Finances in Divorce podcast, so please do listen to our part one. I am joined by barrister and judge Rachel Goodall from Three Paper Buildings Chambers in London. Rachel specialises in family and financial remedy matters, and she is one of the very few barristers who is consistently recommended in both of the leading legal directories, Chambers and Partners and the Legal 500. Rachel sits as a deputy district judge in the civil courts, and she is authorised to hear private children's cases. Rachel, it's an absolute pleasure to see you again this morning.
It's always a pleasure to see you, Hattie.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Right, we're about to discuss, I think, and I think I just mentioned to you, didn't I, that I think when you're going through a divorce, after it's who gets the house, if there is a property involved or properties, it's literally the next thing is maintenance, money. So why don't we start by discussing what child maintenance actually means, what that term means, please, Rachel?
Yes, of course, Hattie. Well, it's very simple. It's financial support for children whose parents have separated. So there will be one parent who's the paying parent, giving money to the other parent. It doesn't have to be a parent. It could be a family member who's got care of the child, a guardian. But usually it's between one parent to another, to assist with a child's day-to-day costs.
Yeah.
And when I was doing some research about this, because it is a complicated area, it should be simple, but it's not, I remembered that the impetus for child maintenance and sorting it out really was attributed to Margaret Thatcher. And I had a look at a speech she gave in the summer of 1990, where she said this: marriages may break down, but parenthood is for life. Only one in three children entitled to receive maintenance actually benefit from regular payments. And Hattie, fast forward to 2020, 30 years later, I'm not really sure that things have changed very much, actually.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Rachel. And what a great, you know, kind of statement she did make, because, you know, I have seen statistics that a third of separated couples or divorced couples, because it might not be in divorce, it might be in separation, but you've had a child, the receiving parent of child maintenance usually is shortchanged, or it doesn't appear on time, or it doesn't appear in the form that it was agreed, and things can go wrong on that level. So it's a big statistic, isn't it? And it's quite sad that child maintenance does go down that road when two parties agree to have a child and then they agree to separate, which happens, but then, you know, taking care of that child becomes a really complicated issue. So, all right, let's talk about how child maintenance is calculated by the court and also by the Child Maintenance Service, who assist parents in putting child maintenance arrangements together. How do they calculate child maintenance, and is it calculated differently by the court versus the CMS, the Child Maintenance Service?
Well, Hattie, listeners will probably know and hear people talking about the CSA. I'm going to take you to the CSA. But the CSA, Child Support Agency, that was set up in the 1990s, and now the name is the Child Maintenance Service. So CMS, when we're referring to that in the podcast, really is the new name for the CSA.
Yep.
And how it's calculated is that what happened when the Child Support Agency was set up, now the CMS, was that the power was actually taken away from the court. So the court actually have very limited ability to make an order for child maintenance. it's generally speaking, in most cases, going to be calculated by the CMS. So in terms of how it's calculated and is it different, there are certain cases a court can do a calculation in, but again, generally speaking, it's calculated in the same way. So we'll just very briefly go through the three ways you can arrange child maintenance to be paid.
And we're talking about through the CMS, or we're talking about the courts right now?
Well, there's three options. You can either go through the CMS, where you pay a £20 application fee that's waived if there's domestic abuse or you're under 19 or you happen to live in Northern Ireland. So you can pay your £20 and the CMS will liaise with both parents and they'll come up with a figure. That's one way you can do it.
Okay.
But the other way, and perhaps even before you make that application and pay your £20 to get them to calculate it, is you can come to an agreement between you and the other parent. That's called a family-based arrangement. What I would advise anyone before they even embark on trying to agree is to go online on the Child Maintenance Calculator, which is a government website which is set up for you to just input what you say, whether you're receiving the money or paying the money, and you put all the figures in and it comes up with a calculation. So that's probably the best place to start. Literally just put in Child Maintenance Calculator, and it's a gov.uk website that comes up. So that's the second way to do it. But I should just make it clear that if it's not paid, if you come to an agreement about the money that's being paid, if you've not either got a court order or the CMS haven't made an assessment, you would have to then get that agreement converted into a court order by making an application to the court.
So what we're saying, is if you do agree between yourselves and then it's not paid and the child maintenance service is not involved, the court has not been involved to order these payments, then you can't just go and say, well, we agreed this, he was supposed to pay it, and now I'd like to... Well, you can actually probably make a claim on that basis all you like, but if there's no actual basis for the CMS to say, okay, we can go after the payment.
No, but the CMS... So if you've got an agreement between you and your ex, you need to put it in writing, because it can be seen by the court, if you've put it all in writing, as legally enforceable. And you can get a court order to say, well, you've done it in writing, this is the order, and then you can enforce it, which we'll come onto in a bit. But if it's not paid, you can go to the CMS and say, look, we had an agreement, my ex isn't paid, but they can't go back before the application's made. So let's say you make an agreement in the January of a certain year, it's not paid and you make an application in September to the CMS.
To the CMS, yeah.
They can only date it from September when you made the application. So you could potentially lose out.
Yes, no, indeed. But what we're saying here is if you do agree amongst yourselves, make sure it's written down and make sure you both sign and date it.
Absolutely.
To prove that you both agreed that.
And write the information that it's based on. So we're agreeing that it's this figure, because it's based on this amount, and I'll come on to in a minute how it's calculated. But the third option, so we've got going to the CMS, having your own agreement in writing. The third option is that you can go to the court, but the whole point that the child support legislation was written, it was dated in 1991, is to take it away from the court. So there are only limited circumstances. If you've got someone who earns, for instance, over £156,000 gross a year, you can get a top-up order from the court. You can get, as I say, the agreement we've spoken about put into a court order. If the paying parent lives abroad, for instance, you'd have to go to court. So there are some, albeit limited, circumstances in which the CMS isn't going to work.
Rachel, there seems to be a very basic standard sum, £20, £30 a week per child. Is that correct? The CMS calculation. I think that's what I last saw as being the minimum payable by the paying parent. Is that sum ring a bell with you?
Well, it depends what the paying parent earns. So it's very simple. Depending on what they earn, the calculator that I've spoken about is there. So you input the gross weekly income of the paying parent, and you can deduct from that pension contributions. And then once that figure has, you've got that figure, it's then done on a percentage, taking off if that paying parent has the child for a certain number of nights a year, or they've got other children living with them. So there's a formula. When you say £20 to £30, that they don't say, well, that's the standard figure. It just depends on what the paying parent earns.
Yeah.
So the more they earn, the more they pay, and it depends on the number of children and how many nights they spend with each
parents, etc.
Exactly.
I mean, I get that figure because in the last sort of almost decade, whenever I've told a client to go away and use the CMS calculator, they've come back with it's only thrown out £20 or £30 a child. And, you know, when I see figures like that, I just think, how on earth can anybody support a child on £20 or £30 a week? It's just not possible. You know, but you're right, there is a formula and it is calculated online, and that's how the process is done. So let's talk about the powers that the child maintenance service is going to have, because if two parties are unable to agree on what the paying parent should pay as child maintenance to the other parent, and they go to the child maintenance service first, obviously before looking at issuing court proceedings, which is a very sensible thing, what powers does the CMS have to look into somebody's ability to pay child maintenance? I mean, can the CMS obtain court orders or delve into income and assets if they're not willingly produced by the paying party? Because I've seen it year on year on year. The paying parent for child maintenance, more often than not, starts to say, well, I can't afford that. I've got these outgoings, I've got those outgoings. And all of a sudden, it really is the case that they can't support their own child. So how far can the CMS go?
It's a very good question, Hattie. The CMS do have quite a few powers. They have got powers to inspect premises. They can obtain a warrant to go in and enter, for instance, where the paying parent works to inspect the records. They have got powers also if the money is not paid. So they've already made a calculation. And the money's not paid, there are a whole raft of orders that can be made. For instance, they can get a deduction from earnings.
Directly from the employer.
They can get money from the bank account.
Yeah, so
they can get bailiffs to come in and take property. They can get a charging order and try and get your property sold. They can freeze your assets. They can go to debt collection agencies. So they actually have, in my experience, a lot more power once they've said this is the amount payable. There's
right.
a whole raft of things that can be done. But the good point about your question is, what can they do to actually extract the information? Because we have a lot now, don't we, of self-employed individuals
yes.
who might do a lot of cash-in-hand jobs. And I've had many clients come to me and say, Rachel, I'm being shortchanged. I know my ex earns so much more, but what they're declaring to HMRC is not the truth. So you can, if you get, there are various steps. If the CMS make do a calculation and say this is the amount that your ex should pay, and you're the one receiving it and you think, oh my goodness, that's wrong, or even if you're due to pay and you say you've got it wrong, there are various things you can do to say to the CMS, look, you need to recalculate this, you've got it wrong, you've used the wrong information, you've not taken into account these circumstances. And if they don't accept all of that, you can appeal and go to the tribunal, which is completely independent from the CMS. And they actually have a lot more power than the CMS.
That's very interesting.
Get information from the person, generally speaking, in my experience, it's a person who's paying, who perhaps hasn't produced enough information, and the parent with care saying, I'm not getting, you know, that's not enough. And as I say, the tribunal can say, no, we want you to do X, Y, and Z.
So that's very interesting. So what we're saying here is, in an event that you've gone to the child maintenance service, they've done everything they can to get the information to be able to calculate what child maintenance needs to be paid. And they've come up with a figure and you're saying, sorry, I don't agree with that because I know what my ex earns. I lived with him or her for such a long time. You know, it's not comparative. You can then appeal and go to a tribunal, which will have separate powers to the CMS to make orders in order to extract the information from the paying party if information is being disclosed and not properly presented, basically, or revealed.
Yes, I mean, I wouldn't advise to launch straight into an appeal because it might be a simple case of you contacting the CMS. That's the first thing you need to do.
No, of course. Yeah.
What figures have you used? What have you based this on? What information have you taken into account? Do your own information gathering exercise.
Yeah.
And then say to them, before you appeal, no, that's wrong. You need to take into account this, and you've got that wrong. And it may be, before you even need to appeal, that can be sorted.
Well, you might have... You might have information to provide to the CMS that could be very helpful and useful. So always, I think that's absolutely right. I think, you know, it's an exercise where you may have to work with the CMS in order to give them what they need to see to make a fair judgment on what should be paid. And if everything has been exhausted and you're still thinking, no, you know, there is information that is not being disclosed by the paying party, and I need to get this information out of this person, then you can appeal the decision and go to a tribunal, or it will go to a tribunal, and that's where the tribunal will have more powers than the CMS in order to get that information out. Okay, so let's assume the CMS just didn't work. They just could not, they didn't have the powers to gather the information or the figures they came up with, the final figures they came up with, just wasn't what you were expecting, what you know should be paid. Let's talk about going to court, Rachel, and getting a child maintenance order. And it's very common in divorce proceedings, for example, that child maintenance, if you've got financial proceedings going alongside the divorce proceedings, is agreed. It should be agreed. You know, it's a very important part of the finances of the marriage. So definitely, definitely seek expert advice on that, because once those orders are made, they're made. How does it work? And if you come out, and let's just assume you come out of court with your child maintenance order from the court, so the paying party's been told, this is what you're paying, this is the frequency, and this is how you're going to pay. Does a child maintenance order, first of all, have a lifetime? Because I am aware that it does, and I just want to talk about that a little bit.
So if the court has made an order for child maintenance, whether that's because it's by way of an agreement that is put into an order, or because it has its own jurisdiction in terms of some of the things I spoke about with the high income or the, you know, one of the parents abroad, that has a lifetime in terms of how old the child is. So it will go up to the child's 16th birthday or to age 20 on the basis that child benefit is received or that the child is doing A-levels or equivalent. So it has a lifetime in terms of the age of the child.
Full-time education.
Yes, exactly. And it would be, the order is normally expressed at so much per child. So that as each child grows up and then leaves, it will then be just the remaining children. But in terms of the lifetime of the order, once the order has been in force for 12 months, and this is an agreement case, it's not one of those unusual ones that can't go to the CMS. Once it's been in place for 12 months, either parent can go to the CMS. So you need to check that the CMS have got jurisdiction to do it. But in most cases, they do. Either parent after 12 months can go to the CMS and say, right, I've had an order. We've had it for 12 months. Now I want you to do a calculation. And that's when you pay the £20 fee and they calculate it. But unless and until you do that, the court order will be in force. So that's where the 12-month, often people think, oh, the order only lasts for 12 months. It lasts for longer unless you go to the CMS to say, I want a different figure calculated.
So let's talk about what happens when you have a child maintenance order, and this myth about child maintenance orders only lasting for 12 months takes place, and the payer says, they only last for 12 months. Guess what? I'm not paying as much, or I'm not paying the amount. What can the receiver do? What is the court likely to do if clearly the paying party is going to say, well, I can't afford to pay that amount or any amount if they're stopped paying at all anymore, and they'll have to present that. But what is a court likely to do to punish a payer? That's what people want to hear, isn't it? What's a court going to do about a court order that's been breached?
Well, whether it's a week after the order's made or 13 months after the order's made, if it's within 12 months, then the court has the power to enforce. So you would make an application to say to the court, right, you've made an order, it's not being adhered to, I want enforcement. And enforcement can be, I want a charging order on their property, I want a deduction from earnings. There are lots and lots of things a court can do. And I would always advise on this to get specialist legal advice, because enforcement is very difficult, actually, even for lawyers and judges. It's bit of a minefield in terms of the raft of things the court can do. And there can be a judgment summons, where
and what needs to be considered as well. I think that's really important, Rachel. Look, you just can't turn up in court and say I want a charging order because they've got a house and they've stopped paying me my £250 a week. It doesn't really work like that. There's a lot to be taken into account and considered, and a lot of work needs to be prepared and presented for the court's consideration in order to see whether a charging order is correct and appropriate.
Absolutely, because it's very complicated. But yes, the court does have power. If you're at the like we spoke about, if you're at the 13-month point, because the paying person has said, "Oh, I only last for 12 months, I'm not paying anymore." Well, unless they've gone to the CMS, the court will have power to enforce. So what you need to do very quickly is if the paying parent isn't paying, you need to do what you can to try and sort it out between the two of you, whether it's directly mediation or through solicitor or barrister. And if you can't, you will need to make an application, and then the court will have the power to enforce that.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, like you say, they're just not simple calculations and simple processes, because how a charging order, for example, or a freezing order or orders of that magnitude affect the person that they're made against has to be really carefully looked at and assessed by a court. And, you know, they're just not easy to get because they do affect people's lives massively. Well, even if they are somebody who is just dodging the fact that they need to take responsibility and financially maintain the children or the child that they've had. Okay, we have time to discuss one more area, and I do think this is really important because, again, this is something that most people do not realise actually, can happen. So you're receiving your child maintenance, whether it's agreed through the CMS or whether it's via a court order, it's being paid, and you move in with a new partner. Can the paying person go and say either to the CMS or back to the court and say, well, hold on a moment. Let's assume the paying partner is the man. She has just moved in with a new boyfriend. And he, for example, has got his own children that have moved into this household. Why am I supporting my children completely when, you know, there's a family there now, there's a unit there now. She's now got support from a new boyfriend. They've moved in. They should be sharing that financial responsibility. Let's talk about that.
It's a common question I've heard. The short answer is it's your child. You need to pay for your child, whether or not your ex, i.e. the parent with care, has got, you know, moved in with a multi-billionaire. It doesn't matter. You need to pay for your child.
I absolutely love that, Rachel.
You need to pay for your child to their parent. It's rather controlling, in my view, to say, I'm only going to pay when the child's with me and I'll maybe help towards uniform, etc. It's got to be cold, hard cash, I'm afraid, paid to the parent with care, and nothing else will do, I'm afraid.
Well, Rachel, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, you agree to have children when the going's good. The children are your responsibility for the rest of your life. And I think you're absolutely right. It doesn't matter who your partner's moved in with or who you may have moved in with. It makes no difference. You should have that responsibility over your child. And I do think I would like to see the courts becoming a little bit more stricter on this, because there are so many people, mostly women, who are done out of their child maintenance because the man decides he's found a really clever way of hiding his income, or not showing all his income, or he's just decided, you know what, I'm just not going to pay. And these women have to find the money to go to court, to get legal advice, to get expert advice, to say, right, well, I'm going to take you to task, mate. You're just not going to leave us high and dry like this. There's just too much of that going on, Rachel. Seriously.
They need to come and see you, Hattie. Even to appeal the CMS and go to a tribunal, it's really complicated. Even family lawyers would say it's the legislation is perhaps one of the most difficult areas, that and enforcement. So go and see someone top notch like you, get proper advice, and challenge it and get the money your child deserves. After all,
absolutely.
It's going to be them who suffer.
No, absolutely. I mean, I've had clients in the past who have said, I don't need his money. I don't even want his money. This isn't about your pride. You know, I know it doesn't sit well, you know, to have to say you need that money to support your children. But I think it comes down to one simple thing. You have a child, you've got children, whoever had those children, like you say, needs to take responsibility for them. And that financial responsibility is a massive part of that process.
Like Margaret Thatcher said, Hattie, parenthood is for life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it totally is. It actually gets more expensive as they get older, in my experience. But there you go. Rachel, that's all we've got time for today. Thank you so much for another great conversation.
It's been fabulous. It's always an absolute pleasure, as I said at the start.
And I'm looking forward to our further podcasts on finances in divorce. And perhaps next time we can look at doing spousal maintenance, because that's another biggie, isn't it?
So yes.
There you
very,
go.
Very happy to speak about that.
I've just pinned you in for that one. Lovely. And what I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.